Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Second final hour of Red Sox review. Velani hanging out with you until 2 a.m. following a Red Sox 4-2 Game 2 World Series victory. 617-779-7937. The phone number on Twitter at ChrisVelani44. You can certainly chime in either place. Your thoughts welcome after this Red Sox victory, just trucking the Dodgers right now. And it's one thing, quick thought before we get to the phone calls. And I was talking about this earlier today with a combination of folks, some of them from Boston, some of them not from Boston. And when you think about the overall mentality, now I'm on the younger end to really remember the cursed years. I'll be honest about that. But I do remember a mentality growing up that is just well ingrained. If you've been a Red Sox fan for any length of time prior to 2003, 2004, those seasons when the curse was almost and then finally flipped, just a thought process that the Red Sox weren't going to win. There was some way in which this would go wrong. There was some, whether it be the curse of the baseball gods themselves, whether it be injuries, bad weather, good weather, too much sunshine, I don't know. Something was going to go wrong. A ball through the legs, a fly ball that finds the net. Something would result in the Red Sox seemingly promising season going down in flames. And now, and it's a product of the Red Sox, it's a product of all the success of the teams here over the last 15 years, and it's inevitable that this would happen, but it's difficult to talk Red Sox fans into that panic mode now. And I do think there's a bit of a cognitive dissonance here between what you hear from talk radio, and I'm including myself in this, by the way, for sure. But we tend to look for the negative, right? What could go wrong? Because that's the way that New England sports was ingrained for so long, for so many years. It was the expectation of, okay, things are good now, but when is it not going to be so good? And when it does go wrong, what will lead the team down that path? Now, it's hard to talk yourself into those sorts of things for a lot of Red Sox fans and for a lot of Boston sports fans in general. And now I don't know how I would talk myself into the Dodgers winning this series. And I was sort of stumbling through it at the end of the last hour because I don't really have a clear, coherent thought that explains Los Angeles getting back into this. Red Sox have the better lineup top to bottom. Their starting pitching has been every bit what the Dodgers have been, and I think they have more depth. Their bullpen has been outstanding. And the potential Achilles heel, the potential weakness, has been a strength. Not only did you're thinking about the bullpen surviving. The bullpen's thriving. The bullpen is putting teams away. And it was effective in outside of Craig Kimbrell in the ALDS, in the ALCS, and now everybody, Kimbrell included, in the World Series. You get a lead through five or six innings, and there's no real fear of blowing it or hope of coming back on the other side. And it's a product of this particular team for sure and just how good they are and the magic of Alex Cora and whatever else you want to buy into. But it's also a product of a shift in mentality over the last 15 years that if you didn't grow up here and if you didn't sort of understand how it was before, can be hard to wrap your mind around when you really step back and think about it. And that's, you know, what this Red Sox team has been a big part of over the past 15 years or so. It's been, what, 16 trips to championships, to either the Super Bowl or the World Series or the Stanley Cup or the NBA Finals, 11 victories, I think I'm counting right. You lose count after a while. But the Red Sox can make it 4-for-4 if they can finish this one off, and I have absolutely no reason to doubt that they will. 617-779-7937. Let's jump to some phone calls here. Paul in Concord is up next on Rafael Devers. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, hi. Some unsung hero if you can find an unsung hero on this team, I think Devers had like 7 or 8 putouts at third tonight. And for someone who's just thought of as kind of an offensive player, I thought that was huge for Price to see that side of the infield. Bogarts had some nice plays too. The Benintendi at bat against Ryu that took like 20 minutes, I think that finally rattled him to where he ended up walking Pierce. I forget where it was in the game. And then honestly, the Kinsler RBI, I think, made that Price inning where Price gave up 2 runs a lot easier, much more easier to handle. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it was just like, great, we gave up 2 runs. I'm almost in shock at how dominant this team is. I don't know how you feel about the word dominant.
It applies.
Yeah.
It absolutely applies.
I think you're right about the World Series. I mean, the Red Sox are going to win one of these games with their bats. I mean, like game 4 is probably going to be like 13-5, something like that. And I think the right move as far as J.D. Martinez is – leave Mookie in right because they have a lot of left-handed batters. I heard Lou Maloney say that tonight. And Benintendi in center, J.D. Martinez in left. I don't think that can hurt us very much.
And I think that's what will happen, Paul. And thanks for the phone call. And you brought up a couple of things that I did want to bring up. And shame on me for not getting to him sooner because they were significant in this game. First, Devers, who not only has put together the streak was snapped tonight, but 8 straight playoff games with an RBI. It was Lou Gehrig, A-Rod, and I think Ryan Howard, the only other 3 guys to do that, so some pretty good company. Happy 22nd birthday yesterday for Rafael Devers, too. He's now 22 years, 1 day, and an hour and change old, but he's done a lot more before his 22nd birthday than most of us ever will, that's for sure. But Devers, defensively tonight, made a couple of nice plays in the 6th inning, and this is when Price was cruising a little bit. He had gotten out of the 4th. Great play from Benintendi that was talked about a lot in the 5th inning, but then a fantastic break by Rafael Devers on that bunt. And it was Taylor at the plate, and he does the telltale sign of bunting, takes the step back with the right foot, the hand split. You know he's trying to drop one down. He's trying to get a hit. I'm not a big bunting fan. Some callers here that love bunting. The only bunting I like is the red, white, and blue type in the World Series. Other than that, not a huge bunting fan. I want to see offense. I want to see guys hit. But Taylor tries to sneak one in there. Devers gets a fantastic jump and makes the play, gets an out, and it's the quick inning that David Price really needed and the Red Sox really wanted after retaking the lead in the 5th. And Price had a very long wait, too, with Ryu going through the pitching change and then how many mound visits. Long wait for David Price. You want a quick inning there. He got it, and that play by Devers went a long way towards making sure that he got it. And then the other thing that Paul brought up, the at-bat or the plate appearance technically from Andrew Benintendi. And Ryu had a good curveball going all night long, threw a really good 2-1 curveball to Benintendi in that at-bat in the 5th, gets him to 3-2, spoils a couple of 3-2 pitches. One really good 3-2 curveball from Hyungjin Ryu that Benintendi is able to foul off and eventually work his way on base. That was a huge, huge at-bat. Huge at-bat in that game. 2 outs at that point, and Ryu's making pitches. It's not like the Pierce at-bat when Madsen comes in, and not that Pierce did anything wrong. Madsen threw 5 balls, 4 of them weren't close, and Pierce goes to first base, and the Red Sox walk in a run. Ryu was making pitches, and Benintendi was making them work. And he threw a couple of really good curveballs, including one with 2 strikes that was beautiful. And Benintendi fouls it off and keeps that going. So unsung things to talk about tonight, unsung heroes, as it were. That was a huge, huge moment in that game. Bigger even than the catch that Benintendi made. And the catch was spectacular. And a lot of great photos were taken. And that'll get headlines, and maybe this walk will be forgotten. Maybe that 3-2 curveball that's fouled off will be forgotten, but damn it, not on my watch. If it gets forgotten, it will not be for a lack of effort on my part, because Ryu made some really good pitches there, and Benintendi did well to eventually work his way on base, keep the inning going. Pierce walks in a run, and then the big hit from Martinez. 617-779-7937. Steve is in Charlton up next on Red Sox Review. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Doing well.
Good. Hey, I'm a big fan of your show, and I think you're doing a great job, especially when you got to do both the calling, dealing with callers and doing the updates at the same time. So good job there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to just say that, you know, my Valley girl from earlier caller, you know, the putouts, I think it was a missed call that technically I think Devers was assisting, not necessarily doing the putout.
Assist, yeah, sure.
You know, but he definitely made some nice plays today. I think also I want to talk a little bit about Kinsler and how he's definitely making an early caller. I think it might be his wife's knees weak based on his ability to, A, provide a Gold Glove award-winning defense, and, B, clutch hitting, which apparently, you know, he's not aware of based on his wife's feedback. So just wanted to understand what you think about that.
Well, look, I talked about it a little while ago, and thanks for the call, Steve. Kinsler is far from an offensive dynamo. He's not really paid to be. Alex Cora has talked ad nauseum about the level of defense that you get from Ian Kinsler. Any offense he gets, I don't want to say it's a bonus because they expect production from all over this lineup, but he's given them some offense. He's had some multi-hit games in the postseason. He drove in a run tonight. And I know it's maybe people that are few and far between, but somebody on Twitter tonight, well, when's Xander Bogaerts going to contribute to the Sox offense? Did you miss the double in the run that he had? And Kinsler drove him in that spot. So you're still getting those contributions from Kinsler. I think the fact that Kinsler, first of all, has had trouble putting the ball in play at times. A lot of strikeouts for him in the postseason. I don't even know what the number is at this point, but he's added to that total in both games of the World Series so far. And the fact that you've got other guys, you have depth on this team that makes the anti-Kinsler crowd able to point to, okay, what about Brock Holt, Eduardo Nunez, somebody else that could potentially play in the infield, makes it easier to criticize Kinsler. But I said this last hour, you're telling me Kinsler is going to play the defense you expect him to play and give you a 1-for-3 with an RBI? Sold. Where do I sign? 1-for-3 without an RBI? Sold. I mean, that's exactly what you want out of that guy. Three-hit nights, game-changing home runs, those types of plays. Yeah, you might get them from Kinsler, but you're more apt to get those from guys like Devers, obviously guys at the top of the order like Betts and Martinez, Benintendi et al. But with somebody like Kinsler, he had a nice game tonight. He gave the Red Sox a shot to win, and that run was big early in the game. It was a two-run game. Everyone was significant. It was a two-out situation. Red Sox have been great with two outs, but you don't want to leave somebody out there in scoring position after Bogaerts gives you a double, and Kinsler picks him up and drives him in. 617-779-7937. Ben in Manchester on the pregame first pitch ceremony. Hello, Ben.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well.
Okay, yeah, so I was at the game, and I knew before the game started, I mean, talking about baseball gods, that the Red Sox were going to win.
Okay.
I've never seen this happen before, where the ceremonial first pitch involved the manager of the opposing team. I mean, Dave Roberts, obviously a hero of Boston, but it seemed kind of crazy for him to be involved in the Red Sox home World Series game first pitch ceremony.
Now, I need a quick clarification here, Ben, because full disclosure, I was getting ready for some stuff with the broadcast. I didn't see the ceremonial first pitch. My understanding is that Roberts kind of went out, said hello to the former teammates, then went back to the dugout, then they had the first pitch. Is that the order of events?
Yeah, he didn't throw, but they were like, and now for the ceremonial first pitch, the stars of the 04 Red Sox team, and he was like the third of the six announced, and he came out and was part of the whole spectacle. I mean, I just think that's kind of crazy that the away manager was involved in like the home team ceremonial first pitch.
That's a little weird. That is
not thrown it, but that alone was like, oh, Red Sox are going to win. He's on our side.
Yeah, that is a little weird, Ben. And thanks for the call. Had he thrown it, that would have been really strange, and I would have had a big issue with that if I were a Dodgers fan or a Dodgers player. Certainly, what is this guy doing? But that was unusual, and I think Dodgers fans certainly understand, and Dodgers players understand the history that Dave Roberts has here, and his place in Red Sox folklore, so to speak. If he goes out, says hello, gets the ovation from the crowd, I certainly wasn't in the group, the Tony Mazz group that said boom. This seems like a take for the sake of a take, but whatever. That's how some people operate. I'm told it's a lucrative profession, but I don't buy into that. You like the guy. He's done nothing to make himself less likable in the time since he stole that base. Happens to be managing the other team now, and gets an ovation going out for the first pitch. It's weird. Maybe it's uncomfortable from the Dodgers' perspective, from the Red Sox perspective. I don't think it is. The bigger controversy with the first pitch was the apparent lack of invite from Curt Schilling. And Rob Bradford put a post up on WEEI.com citing Red Sox spokeswoman Zeynep Curran, who said that the ceremonial first pitch started with a couple of 2004 guys and grew organically as we learned that other 04 players were planning to be at the ballpark tonight. There was no blanket invite to the entire team and no slight intended to anyone not included. It still, to me, feels like a bad look to not invite Schilling, to not get him there, if for no other reason than it spares you this headache. Schilling would be cheered, despite the fact that many in the ballpark may disagree with his politics or maybe from Rhode Island and may have some real reasons to dislike him, and that is their prerogative. I think on balance, he would still be cheered in that context, coming out as part of the 2004 World Series heroes, and you spare yourself a massive headache by once, okay, take them at their word. It was supposed to be just Pedro and Wakefield and Ortiz, a couple other guys, whatever. Once it started to grow, once Alan Embry's involved, once you the other managers involved, put out the invite. They have been able to turn things around in terms of pregame ceremonies and planning things with much less notice than this. And if they put out the invite, he doesn't want to go or he's got something else going on, that's fine too. But you spare yourself the PR headache. That's just my look at it. I'm not going to delve into his politics and the way that things ended with this ownership group when he left the Red Sox a decade ago. It's not about that. Not everybody from that 2004 team left on great terms, and they've all been welcomed back at various points, Schilling's included in this group. I just think it was a bad look for the Red Sox to not have him out there and not at least make the offer. Okay, now this thing is getting a little bit bigger. You can relate to that, right? I mean, we've all had what was supposed to be a small gathering blossom into more than we expected, and now it's like, well, you know, we got these people coming. If we leave this guy out, if we don't invite this girl, if we don't, they're going to feel slighted, and it's going to be a whole issue. Let's just make it easy, put out the invite to everybody. That's how I would approach it if I'm the Red Sox. It's a ceremonial first pitch. It means nothing. It's a chance for the fans to cheer. It's about them, not ownership, not old grudges or political differences. Just have him out there and spare yourself the headache. Is it a big deal? No. Will it be made a big deal tomorrow? Probably on this station and a lot of other places? Yep. And it seemed like both Curt and Shonda Schilling both tweeted about it tonight. It seemed like they felt slighted. And again, in the context of 2004 World Series hero, I can't say I blame him. So, not a great look for the Red Sox in that regard tonight. Doesn't do anything to take away from this win, though. Red Sox on the field, no qualms, no issues whatsoever, and they got a commanding lead in the World Series. 617-779-7937. A big reason that they have that 2-0 lead is David Price, and that's what Kenny in Boston wants to talk about. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I know David Price has gotten his heat in the city so far, but, man, last two starts, you got to give him credit, change him away, cut her in. I mean, not only is he stepped up big, but, you know, I think the biggest part was when we took that, when they took the 2-1 lead, the Dodgers did, and him to come back and shut the door, I think that was a huge step for David Price tonight and really build the momentum for the Sox tonight. I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, sure, and this is where I started over an hour ago, Kenny, but it's definitely worth circling back to. If you had any yeah buts left over from David Price's performance in the ALCS, his first postseason win as a starter, yeah, but they had a big cushion. Yeah, but the Astros were a beaten team. Yeah, but even if they lost that game, they still have two to come back to Fenway. It wasn't a real pressure situation. All this other crap, this moving the goalpost garbage that people try to lay on David Price after that start in Game 5. You have any of those? They were all answered, and you have no more arrows left in the quiver after what he did tonight. Not a pressure situation. You lose tonight, you're tied at one, going to Dodger Stadium for three. Big night for the offense to take some heat off the starter? Nope. Hyunjin Ryu pitched really well and kept the Red Sox off balance through a great curveball and kept the offense, the Red Sox offense, relatively in check until he started to run into trouble and sputter in the fifth inning and got knocked out of the game. You know, everything's just sort of smooth sailing. Nope, not the case. It was pucker time there in the fourth. He had to battle. He had to overcome what I thought were, again, borderline pitches. His command was right there. He was nibbling the edges in the first couple innings and getting the calls and wasn't getting it in the fourth. So had to come in with a pitch to Puig and got too much of the plate, gives up a hit. Bases loaded, no out, jam. You know, even before that Puig hit, bases loaded, no out jam in a game that you don't need to win, but really want to win to put yourself in a better position. It's early in the series, and you're pitching in the cold. Throw that on top of there, too, because that's been an issue for Price in the past. Every single possible mitigating factor that you could have thrown at David Price tonight or tried to after Game 5, which I didn't buy into any of them. It was a postseason start. It was a big one. He was facing Verlander, and he went out there, and he was dominant. Absolutely dominant. So the David Price monkey off the back in the postseason, that was Game 5. And I don't want to hear any garbage about it wasn't a real pressure situation. It absolutely was. But even if you had all of those, he answered every one tonight. Had to keep the Dodgers in check against Ryu. Had to keep the wheels from completely falling off in the fourth inning. Had to work around some times where he wasn't getting the breaks, wasn't getting the 50-50 fastball in the black. I thought he struck out Turner twice, and I tweeted that out. I still believe it. Regardless of what the K-zone, the box is showing, he got that pitch earlier in the game. He didn't get it at that point. That's a frustrating thing for a pitcher. He had a long conversation with the home plate umpire after that inning. And he was able to work through all of that. And then when he got a lead, and I did mention this a few minutes ago in the context of the Rafael Devers play on the Turner bunt, when he got a lead after sitting for a while on a frigid night, comes back out and does exactly what you want an ace to do, exactly what you want a top-of-the-rotation caliber guy to do. Leave no hope. Shut him down. You got the crooked number on top now, lead back after they hadn't trailed against the Dodgers through the first game and a half. Come back out and blow this team away. And he was able to do that with a very quick, efficient sixth inning with a little bit of help from Rafael Devers, who made a great play on the bunt. Great read and then a very, very good play on the bunt to make sure the Red Sox recorded that out. Every possible mitigating factor. Every possible contingency, every yeah but that you might have had for David Price, he answered them tonight. And what's the story for Price in the postseason? Same as Kershaw, same as Alex Rodriguez, same as a lot of others, same as John Lackey. They were bad until they weren't. And for Price, it took a lot longer than I think you might have expected for a pitcher of that caliber, but that is not an uncommon tale. When it comes to guys in the postseason, so many of them stink until they don't. This guy can't perform in the postseason. He just can't until he does. And that's the case for Price right now. And he was bad in the ALDS too. Mediocre in his first start against the Astros. But he was lights out in Game 5, and he was great tonight. In some ways, tonight impressed me more. Only because you were looking at a situation where the other guy's matching you and you know you got to go out there and perform and you can't afford to have any sort of situation where things spiral out of control like they could have but didn't in the fourth. 617-779-7937. Half hour to go. We'll take more of your phone calls. We'll hear from Red Sox manager Alex Cora following this victory. Sox up 2-0 in the World Series. Chris Villani with you on Red Sox Review, Sports Radio WEEI. We got about 20 minutes left on Red Sox Review. Chris Villani with you until 2 a.m. Text line 37937. We've got a few that have come in here, including one saying that the media should line up and take turns kissing David Price's rear end. Most of the guys on WEEI should lead the way. Look, demons exercise, no question. One asked about Eduardo Rodriguez starting game four. I think that's a possibility. And Eduardo Rodriguez is another guy. Look at the little things in the series, but he was trusted in a big spot last night to come in and get an out. There's one out, but prior to that in the postseason, he'd been largely on mop-up duty when the team's up by too many to have it make a difference if he goes out and stinks. So they put him in a spot where he had to get an out, and he did. But I think he does start game four because I think the Red Sox win game three and Eovaldi pitches in the eighth. How's that for a prediction? In this texter, Manny wasn't there to throw out the first pitch either. He's the MVP. I buy the Red Sox story. Quit with the hot takes. You can say the hot take thing because you can't think of anything else to say, I guess, and that's what people say when you disagree with an opinion. My opinion, the Red Sox could have made life easier on themselves by inviting Curt Schilling. He lives 10 miles away, or how far midfield is, 15 miles away from the stadium. I don't know where the hell Manny is. He could be in the Dominican. He's not around. It's not. If it was a question of the guys halfway around the world or even in the Midwest somewhere or West Coast, Florida, and you had to fly him in, okay, fine. On short notice, I buy that. But you save yourself a headache, and that's all it is. Just make life. I'm a big fan on, when possible, path of least resistance. Well, make things harder than they need to be. Things are hard enough as it is. Don't make them needlessly harder. You could have made life easier here by just throwing an invite out to the guy. That's all. Did I believe the Red Sox story? Maybe. Maybe. It was unintentional. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Here's the thing I don't believe. Even if it was unintentional, it wasn't personal, I find it hard to believe it slipped their mind. Okay, some other guys are coming. Couldn't think of it. And nothing else dawned on them of who else might be around that they could invite to throw out the first pitch. Again, it's a ceremonial first pitch. It's meaningless. It's a chance for the fans to cheer for 2 minutes. Ugh. But now it will be talked about, and it didn't have to be if you just took that path of least resistance. Let's go to Graham in the car. Wants to talk about David Price. He threw the pitches that did matter tonight. Hello, Graham.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
No problem.
For all the reasons you were saying about Price checking off all his boxes, I still kind of in the back of my mind see him, shopping himself around after this year, because once he shakes the moniker of a playoff choker, he could go make more money. He could leave the critical Boston market, and there's going to be plenty of, quote, good teams that would have him, I'm sure. So I think this might be the best for everybody. Get something good out of Price, win a World Series, have him go make some more money, and maybe move on and save some money, bring back Eovaldi or something.
I think a lot of Red Sox fans would sign up for that in a heartbeat. Thanks, David. Glad you finally figured out in the postseason. Thanks for the ring. Happy trails. Again, and I mentioned this in the Eovaldi context, I'm not sure at this point how the market plays out for Price or for anybody. The free agent market's been a little unusual over the past couple of off seasons, so I'm not exactly sure how it plays out. If I had a guess as I'm sitting here right now, my guess, David Price is a Red Sox pitcher next year. Colt in Boston on David Price. Hello, Colt.
Yeah, hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well.
Well, I wasn't expecting to have to comment on the last caller. David Price has no chance of leaving. No one's given him $31 million after this. It really doesn't matter, I guess.
If Price leaves, and we've known this all along, it's not just going to be the money. It's going to be because he wants to change the scenery. It just comes down to dollar for dollar, you're right. He's going to make the most money here. So it would have to be somebody gets close and he decides, I don't want to be here anymore.
No one's getting close.
and I think you're probably right.
No one's getting above $25 million. Why would anyone give him $25 million? He's a 4 ERA pitcher.
He's a proven postseason performer, though, now. Proven postseason performer, baby.
I don't know about that. I will say this. The reason I called in, the reason I wanted to talk, I thought a lot of people really after game one were saying, you know, the Red Sox are going to walk. This is a cakewalk. They were a couple, you know, bounces away from being down 0-1 coming into this game. They're a couple bounces away from being down 0-2 in this game, honestly. Price definitely held it down tonight. I was at the game, so I would say that was a big key. I think a huge win here was David Price took the ball, held it down. A lot of people have talked about, you know, he's going to go make money. It really wasn't an issue until the last couple starts. Now we're up 2-0. Everything's fine and dandy. The last caller, I guess, has led into another point where it's David Price is going to be a Red Sox for the next 3 years. So we need to kind of buckle down for that. I think what we weren't ready for was the conversation that David Price is now our savior. interesting that Eovaldi has now pitched the last 2 8th innings. I think Cora has made it clear he's going to go ahead and assault getting wins. He got the 2 wins yep. here in Boston, and we'll figure it out from there.
Yeah, and that's been, and thanks, Colt, we're kind of up against it here, but that's been his approach. He's talked about it. He's been upfront about it. We're going to throw what we need to do to win tonight. You know, as far as Price goes, I've kind of talked ad nauseum about him. He was impressive tonight. He really was. He was impressive in game 5. Proven postseason performer, right? I mean, that's the new label for David Price. You got to call him that. Every time before you say his name, it's not David Price. It's proven postseason performer David Price. It's alliterative. It flows off the tongue. It works. Speaking of Alex Cora, here's some of what he had to say to the media following this 4-2 win for the Red Sox tonight.
At least we know if things don't go well in L.A., we're coming back. So that's good. You know, we played 2 good games today. Tough one, you know. They pitched well. We put some good at-bats. We pitched extremely well. David was amazing. And then the bullpen did what they've been doing during October, and now we're up 2-0.
And Ron, second row, Pete, second, third row to your left.
Alex, how much do you think Price's start in the LCS kind of led to the start tonight?
Nah, you know, he's been throwing the ball well. He had the tough one against the Yankees. But the first start against Houston, George hits, you know, a broken bat double, and then we don't finish a play, and then Marwin hits a home run. But he threw the ball extremely well. Then, you know, he pitched great in Houston, and today he was amazing. You know, he was missing his spots by not much. He was pitching to the edges of the strike zone. Good fastball, good two-seamer, good changeup. And like I said, you know, like I said in Houston, I get it, you know, the numbers and all that, but this guy's a great pitcher. He's been one of the best pitchers in the big leagues for a while, and he cares. And, you know, in a personal note, I'm very, very proud of him, very happy for him that now, you know, he can keep pitching. Like he said the last time, you know, there's not going to be questions in spring training about David Price in October. You know, he beat the Houston Astros in Houston. He beat the Dodgers here in Dodger State, in Fenway Park. So I'm happy for that, you know, because he deserves it. This guy works. He cares about his teammates. And like I said before, he's one of the best pitchers in the big leagues.
Alex Cora talking about David Price. And the one label that you couldn't throw on Price and the thing that cuts against the Price hates it here so much, he's going to leave and take less money and opt out narrative, even before he became proven postseason performer David Price, he's a guy that's really embraced in that clubhouse. And he has himself embraced the mantle of a leader in the clubhouse. He is somebody his teammates like. He's somebody who sticks up for his teammates. All of those types of things that make it more tolerable, more bearable to be a part of an organization, even if the fan base at times hasn't been completely sold on you. David Price checks all those boxes too. So that, even if you look at, well, okay, maybe a team doesn't have to get close because he doesn't like it here. The fans are embracing him, first of all. He gets cheered at Fenway Park. When he pitches well, he gets cheered. That's the way it generally works most places. So he's being embraced now at Fenway Park. He's winning in the postseason. And, you know, on top of all of that, I understand the argument of just in general, pitchers over 30, a lot of money still owed. Some of it might be money just fired out of a T-shirt cannon by the end of his contract because he's not pitching or not pitching effectively. I understand all of that. But look at the player that you're getting right now. Is there anybody who'll make the argument that David Price wasn't a significant reason why this team won 108 games? And I said, you know, I'll admit when I'm wrong, like I was going into the ALCS, but I'll also remind you when I'm right. And I said consistently, David Price, if this team wins a World Series, he will be part of it. So wrap your minds around that. And a significant part of it, not just somebody along for the ride, but he will be a significant part of it, and he has been, with what he did in Game 5 against the Astros and what he did tonight. And if the Red Sox go on and sweep this series, if this was sort of the deflating moment for the Dodgers, they had an opportunity, had a lead, and couldn't hold on to it and couldn't do more damage against Price when they had the shot, you know, this is a start, this is a moment, playoff moment that you'll look back on. And tell the story of the 2018 Red Sox in that context of David Price coming through in the postseason and being an ace and being what he is paid to be and what Red Sox fans have hoped that he would be. And the point with just a minute or two left here that I'll quibble with the previous caller who brought up Price, he sort of made it seem as though the Red Sox were incredibly fortunate in both of these games, and they've gotten some breaks. I don't think there's a question about it. I don't think you can win a championship in any sport without having some things bounce your way, some breaks go your way. But I don't think this is a case where the better team is the team that's losing the series. And I don't see how anybody could make that argument. The Red Sox have played better than the Dodgers for two games. The Red Sox have outperformed Los Angeles leaps and bounds in terms of their manager, in terms of their bullpen, in terms of the depth in their lineup. They've matched the Dodgers in terms of starting pitching. Price was better than Ryu tonight. Kershaw and Sale were about a wash in game ones. They've at least matched in terms of starting pitching. Make no mistake, the better team is going to Dodger Stadium on Friday night on top 2-0. Now, will they win the series? I think they will. I do not think we will see another baseball game at Fenway Park this year. Red Sox will win at least 2 out of the next 3 and be the world champions again. Not bad. Joe Cortez, great job producing tonight. My name's Chris Villani. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisVillani44. Be sure to stick around. WEEI, complete coverage of this game tomorrow. Reaction to Game 2, looking ahead to Game 3, and then Game 3 Friday night, 7 o'clock the pregame, and the first pitch just after 8 o'clock on the WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Happy Thursday, everybody. Red Sox are up 2-0.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.